When you began here, you often stated that you wanted to narrow or remove, definitely remove in the end, the achievement gap between white students and minority students. Where do you feel you've progressed in that effort over the year?
Well, I feel like we've made a lot of progress, and here's why. Of course, the test scores have not come in yet. That'll be sometime in August. But I know in order to change those scores, in order to eradicate that achievement gap, it's going to require systemic change. And systemic change is difficult because it requires change in five areas or six areas. Changes with systems, programs, people, policies, practices, and processes. And we've began to make a lot of rapid as well as significant change in all of those six areas. Therefore, when I look back and look at the change that we've undergone in those areas, I know that we're moving in the right direction.
Rapid change is sometimes tumultuous.
It really is. Along with that rapid change comes a lot of stress on the system, causes a lot of frustration, anxiety, and unfortunately, it even causes the morale, the climate, to be somewhat negative. But, you know, when I look at why we're doing what we're doing, I think it's worth it, because what we're doing is making sure that we have an educational system that will ensure high academic achievement for all of our students. So even though this fast change causes stress on our system and some anxiety, I think it's worth it because we're here to be child advocates. And if that change is going to cause our children to all perform at a high level, then it's worth it.
You came here obviously knowing that rapid change would be somewhat stressful. How do you think the community has reacted to what has gone on the last year compared to what you may have expected when you came in?
Well, you know, I'll be frank with you. I think the community overall has reacted better and more positively, because there are some people that, especially those that are impacted by the change, that are not happy. But there are so many people that understand what we're doing and understand the need for the rapid change and the systemic change. So I've gotten many phone calls, letters, and people that I just see out in the community that say, you know, we're behind you. We understand what you're going through, and we know that it's what's best, because we know that if we continue to do what we've been doing the same way with the same people and expect a different result, then that's not going to happen. So we know that the change is painful for many people, but we also know it's necessary. And they thank me for having the courage as well as the knowledge to know what needs to be changed and how to do it.
We're talking about a couple of specific changes, the transfers of principals, new principals that have brought in, and changes especially to Stratton School, which is a school that some people felt had been neglected. It is only half full, even though it's a brand new building. You've made some dramatic changes there, replacing many of the teachers, or moving teachers out, bringing new ones in. When do we decide that progress has been made there at Stratton and elsewhere in the districts? How long do you think people will have to wait until we see progress?
I really believe that you'll begin to see progress. I even predict that even the test scores that come out in August will be better than what they were. Now, they will not show the kind of improvement that I would like to see, but I think even beginning with the following year's scores, I think each year you'll see incremental successes. And I think after we're here realistically for 3 or 4 years, that's when you're really going to see the big difference. And I think by year five, the achievement gap will be significantly reduced, if not eliminated. But it does take time. This system didn't get the way it is in a year or two, and it's certainly going to take 3 to 5 years to change it, and that's on a fast pace.
You had commissioned a report, a study of the curriculum in the school district, and the report came back a few weeks ago and was not very complimentary of what is the current situation with district policies and with even the organizational structure of the district. How do you make changes from here on in to answer that report? And do you think that shows problems at Unit 4 specifically or elsewhere in general in the country?
Well, how do I make the changes? First of all, I think every change that you make, it has to be data-driven. That's why I want to spend the time and the money to collect data that's reliable, that can help to guide us so that we're making diagnostic prescriptive decisions. In other words, we're not just changing things, but we're looking at recommendations and summary results that have come from audits and studies so that when we make the changes, we're making the changes in an informed way. We're not just guessing. We're making data-driven decisions. So that's how we're going to make the changes, by looking at data, not by what we think. We're not going to use cardiac research or this is what I feel, so to speak, but we're going to actually look at the hard data in order to make sure that the changes that we do make are in the right direction. Now, what was the second part of your question?
Is that indicative of the results that were found the surveys? Is it indicative of a national problem? And do you find yourself fighting some perceptual problems of education that you'd see anywhere else in the country?
Well, I will say this. Of course, the deficiencies that were noted in the curriculum audit, as well as in our court monitors audit, Dr. Peterkin, those things are indicative of this system because they studied our system. But I will say this, that I would be willing to bet that over 80% of the school districts in this nation have the same kinds of problems. It's just a very few school systems that have a diverse population where there's no achievement gap. And in those places, you'll find that they don't have the kind of problems that were brought out in our curriculum audit and also in Dr. Peterkin's monitoring report. But that's a small percentage. I say 80% of the public school districts in this nation have the same kinds of problems that we have. And you can certainly prove that by just looking at the achievement scores in most of your public schools that have diverse populations. And, you know, many times, even here and other places, people blame the students. They blame the families. Yes, the students play a important role. And sure, their families play a very important role. But, you know, unfortunately, children didn't get a chance to choose their parents. And also, fortunately, there are some school systems in this nation that have the same kind of challenges we have. The one-parent families, the home environment that's not conducive to learning, some cases parents that aren't concerned about education and that won't get involved, that's not doing their part. But children from those backgrounds and from those families are still being successful in some school districts, and that's because of the superb, high-quality educational system that's in place in those school districts and on those campuses. So if other people have done it, we can do it too, because they're no better than we are. We have some outstanding teachers, very high quality. It's just that we need to look at our curriculum and structure some things a little different, look at some staff development things that we can do in order to do some things different and to sharpen our teacher skills. And I know that we have the foundation that's necessary for all of our students to be successful here in this district.
Unit 4 is under pressure to improve achievement and bring the racial gap closer together. Through the what you mentioned, Dr. Peterkin's report, and the federal overseer with the Office of Civil Rights. This is a mandated move, and you have to prove results. What do you think we'll see when that next report comes out?
Well, I think to be frank with you, the next report, I don't think you'll see a whole lot of significant progress because, you know, we've only been here 1 year and it takes time. But I think the one after that, you know, you'll begin to see you'll see some progress, but not significant. And that's just being realistic because it takes time. You know, we couldn't just come here and all of a sudden start changing things. We had to get some buy-in by showing the need. We had to get the curriculum audit. We're getting ready to do a facility study that will audit all the district's facilities. We'll be doing a demographic study. We got here, we had two contracts that we had to settle, the teacher's contract as well as the contract of our non-certified staff. And then also we had some significant employee issues that we had to deal with. Plus, it took time to meet people in the school district, the community, the business leaders. So that first year, it just takes time to get to really know where you are and to understand the community and the system that you have just become a part of. So that stuff takes time, but now that's all behind us, and I think we'll even move forward at a faster pace, and we'll see more significant progress each year.
You came in the midst of a district that is getting used to the schools of choice program, where people and people can choose which elementary school their kids can go to.
Right.
Now there's the chance to move it into the middle schools. Where do you see that program going? How do you fix the questions that some have about that program as far as, you know, being able to satisfy the needs and mm-hmm. desires of parents and kids?
Well, first of all, I think the long-term fix is with a very high-quality instructional program on each campus. And that's what parents want. They want to go somewhere. They want their children to go to a school where they feel like their children's needs are being met and they're going to get high-quality instruction. So if you have high achievement scores on all of your campuses, I don't think it's going to matter too much where kids go to school. I really don't. But the other thing is that, you know, you have to perform so that I think once the academic achievement is leveled out at each campus, then I think the day will come where we will no longer be a part of the consent decree, and which will allow us to maybe start looking at neighborhood schools. And that's what parents want also. They want their children to go to school close to where they live so they can walk or ride their bikes and that kind of thing, as well as go to school in the neighborhood, I mean, with the other kids in the neighborhood instead of being scattered out.
So you see schools of choice as a temporary.
I really do, and I really believe that once all of our schools are performing and we have no more achievement gap and all those other issues that cause the district to be up under this consent decree, that I think kids, and I've talked to minority parents, and, you know, they don't care what the population of a school is, if it's 90% minority or 50%, it doesn't matter. They want their kids in a school that's close to where they live, where there's going to be high quality instruction and high student achievement scores. But as it relates to the secondary schools of choice, middle school, of course, the model that we're leaning towards is the one that basically is a cluster model. So where you go to school at the elementary level would pretty much dictate which middle school that your child will be clustered to. However, there will be opportunities for parents to put in transfers. And, of course, there'll be racial fairness guidelines and also capacities that we need to look at to determine whether or not a particular request for another campus can be granted.
And that takes effect this coming year or next?
No, that'll be the following school year, okay. The 2004-2005 school year.
Right. How are the new federal regulations going to affect Unit 4, considering that you're following, you know, the needs of the consent decree and other regulations or requirements? How will No Child Left Behind affect the schools, and how might that affect what funding you'll need and possibly, you know, the tax rate in the area?
Right. Well, I think the No Child Left Behind federal legislation will impact Unit 4, as well as other school districts across the nation, in a very positive way. And the reason I say that is because what it does, it forces you to look at each student, not just your academic achievement scores overall, but look at each student group. And you may have good overall scores, but if there's a subpopulation such as low-income students or Latino students or African-American students or white students, any group that's not performing, then that will impact your funding because there are sanctions, and they can get so severe to the point where if after 5 years or so the school still isn't performing, then they will have some outside agency come in. It could be a state agency or another outside agency come in and take your schools over. The other thing that I think it'll do too is that if schools aren't performing, then what will happen is that because this legislation allows students to transfer to a higher performing school in the area, if their particular home campus is not performing, then the school will close down if all the students decide because of the performance level at that campus, we don't want to go there, then it will close down because there will be no students there to keep it open. So I think that that federal legislation is good. It creates a situation where there's high accountability and high expectations on every campus as well as in every school district.
So create that pressure to do what you said before, try to even out the performance level of all schools.
And it can be done because, you know, we did this in Texas. People complained about it when it first came, the state accountability system. But once everybody figured out that, you know what, it's not going away, and it's smarter for us to focus on solutions rather than excuses. And once we started doing that in Texas, there were just many districts and many schools that closed or eliminated that achievement gap.
How about the future of school buildings? The latest news is that that you're going to be looking at the status of some of the buildings in the Unit 4 district and yeah. make sure that they're meeting minimum standards and guidelines. You'll also have some allegiances to some of those buildings that you'll have to deal with.
Yeah, and, you know, we have some schools that are almost 100 years old. And some of our schools are in excellent shape. And even our schools that are old, they're in good shape. They're taken care of real well. The maintenance and operations department, they do a good job. But I would suspect that some of our schools may have some structural problems. So part of the study will have structural engineers come in and look at the campuses. Others may be in great shape, but when we start looking at building utilization studies, they'll do that. And I just feel like that many campuses will need some kind of modifications, even if it's adding on. Another part of that study, there'll be a demographic study attached to it, and they'll look at the enrollment trends and project out for at least about 20 years. And I got a feeling that the results of that study will indicate that we need to look at adding wings to some schools and also building some new schools because, I mean, the data is there. When you look at where people are moving and the fact that schools, you know, we don't have space right now for kindergarten level across the district. We have 10 seats open. And we know historically between now and August, we're going to get a lot more than 10 children that's going to enroll in this district.
And as you mentioned, a lot of those new families are in certain parts of town.
Right.
Especially I'm looking at Southwest Champaign and Savoy, where they've had some concerns and people have raised their voices that, hey, we need schools.
Yeah, and then you look at Central High School. It's an old building, but it's well-kept. But when you really look at that facility and think about what are the needs of a high school that size, it's landlocked. You don't have
very
parking
much so.
For the students.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have your athletic fields and so forth. So, you know, I would look at I'd be surprised if they didn't make some kind of recommendation related to that. And you look at Edison, that's a very old facility that appears to have some structural problems. I'm not sure, but it certainly appears to be some structural problems according to our maintenance and operations director. But when you think about it, Edison may be a great place at Central. If you take the Edison students and transfer them to Central, then you may have to look at building a new site for Central. And ideally, when you build a new high school, you want that school on about 60 acres so you can have adequate parking and the adequate athletic field and so forth that high school students deserve and need.
So this will be an interesting second year.
Oh, yeah, it sure will be. And then you look at Dr. Howard. It's a beautiful campus, beautiful area. But when you go through the building, especially when the kids are there, you can see how cramped and tight it is for space, and there appears to be some structural problems there. I don't know for sure. I'm not a structural engineer.
But it remains a popular school.
It's popular. And, you know, I've seen facility studies that have looked at an old school that was popular. And instead of tearing it down, what they've done is added to it. And they can take an old, you'd be surprised of what they can do with an old facility, remodel it, and it looks brand new, like a totally different school when they get through with it. And you may have to temporarily place the student somewhere else.
And in that situation,
until they can get that done.
Which happened with Leal School in Urbana. But
yeah.
In this situation also, you're fairly landlocked.
You really are. But you can always build up. You can build up. You can change the way the building is laid out currently. And if the community desires to accept the fact that it is landlocked and accept the small play area for the kids and so forth because they're really tied to the tradition and the history there, then I'm sure that there are things that can do that we could do to enhance that facility where it is, so that even though it's landlocked, it would be a better environment for teaching and learning. And of course, the other option would be to look at a new site and still use that site for something else, not tear it down, but use it for something else. But we'll let the experts guide us on that process. Those are just some thoughts off the top of my head related
to
that.
And this is a process of many years. This isn't going to be done in your second year.
Well, hopefully, though, we'll get our results back. And if things work the way I would like them to, I'll be frank with you, I'd be surprised if this facility study doesn't require us to go to the voters for a bond referendum. And I would like to, if that's what it is going to require, with all the community buy-in and input and so forth, I would hope that we could go to the voters maybe in the spring of 2004 with a bond package, if that's what's needed. Certainly, I wouldn't want to move past the spring of 2005.
All right. Anything else?
That's it. I just appreciate being on the show, and I want you to know that, and all the listeners to know that I love this community. My family and I have adjusted extremely well. And I see the future of this school district to be extremely bright. I know we're going through tough times right now, but all this is possible. It's all doable. It's not mission impossible. And this school district will become a model school district for this state and perhaps this nation.